So, Dick, best airplane you ever flew or not? Do you agree?
It's the best airplane I ever flew, and for the same reason. Now, it had some quirky characteristics, but if you're a young fighter pilot, you take that on as a challenge. You didn't want to fly a mundane airplane. You wanted to fly this Hummer. But anyway, I got the same start that you did. And when I was a little kid and finally just grew up enough to look around, we were basking in the glory of the victory of World War II. And I look around and I just was fascinated about those guys that fought over Nazi Germany and the bombers and the P-51s. And I thought, I wonder if I could do that. Look at the courage. You're the only guy that comes back and a whole squadron is shot down. How in the world do you get in another airplane the next day and do it again? I couldn't imagine that people could actually do that. And it was a haunting thing all my life to find out whether in combat the little Dickie Rutan could do the same thing. Just wonder if it was up to it. And the very first time that this airplane was on public display was at Fresno Air Terminal, and he flew it up from LAX to the factory. And I stood underneath that beautiful snout right there as a little kid, and I looked up at that thing and I thought, wow, it isn't going to get any better than this. And I vowed to myself that someday I was going to fly that airplane and fly it in combat. And then there was one day, the day I'll never forget, just like you. I was standing in the Luke Officers Club, just having completed gunnery school in Luke. Now, if you want to be a real fighter pilot, the only way to get into that is fly F-100s at Luke, right, that gun school. And I was standing in the back of the corner. I just graduated from the gunnery school, and the debauchery that was going on in the club that night, there was guys coming back from Vietnam, and we were all eager, listening to the stories, and we were ready to go. And there was a little bit of drinking of alcoholic beverages, if I recall, and other activities. And pretty soon I found myself standing in the back of the room and overlooking this scene. And I thought to myself, I got orders to combat right in my pocket. And there was no place on planet Earth that I wanted to be and going to be. It was right there at that time. And I was going to find out whether Dickie Rutan could do that or not.
What year was that, Dick?
My Vietnam tour was in 1967 and 1968 during the Tet Offensive.
Right. By the way, how many veterans are here? Raise your hands, please. How many vets? Yeah, great. So, Dick, you get Vietnam squadron and you begin Misties? Is that when that started?
Well, that started, but a couple of things about this airplane that is kind of unique in itself. There was some really strange decisions made when this airplane first came into the inventory. Now, I can imagine that the Air Force was just thrilled to death. They were going to have a supersonic airplane at level flight. Wow. Now, in those days, we didn't have central air data computers and stuff. And North American told the Air Force, he says, hey, look, it's the pitot-static system. You know, they do not have a lot of experience in making a pitot-static system that would work. The big boom was going to help. But they said to the Air Force, now you can either have a pitot-static system that's accurate at slow speed, or you can have it accurate at supersonic speed. And so for some reason, somebody decided, wow, supersonic, that's really fast. The pilots need to know exactly what their altitude and airspeed is supersonic. Not even thinking that 1/10,000th of the flying time of all the F-100s would ever be supersonic. And so we found ourselves on GCA final approach, breaking out at minimums 200 feet, and I'll never forget that the altimeter would unwind to 50 foot below the altitude. And we're doing at 500 knot laydowns, and the altimeter would be almost 2,000 feet in air. And if you would change back and forth a little bit, the altimeters would go all over the place. But boy, as soon as you went out of the Mach, they would swing around, whoop, and now we're accurate. Wow, we have accurate supersonic. Another thing, too, is that this is an airplane that actually has to be flown by the pilot. Wherever you move the controls, that's what the flight services do. Now, that's kind of strange, you F-16 guys, but the pilot actually had to move the controls and to move the control surface. Now, one thing about the F-100, it had a little directional problem, especially the early ones, right, the A models. And some guy was landing at Edwards Air Force Base, and he got the nose high a little bit. And the burner at those days, they didn't light very reliably at high angles of attack. and he got in the classic saber dance. And I think every one of you has seen that. And I know when I went into gunnery school, they sat down and says, welcome to F-100 training. We got a little film we want to show you guys. And so we all got to sit there and watch the saber dance. But that was they tried to fix the tail and make it a little bigger and a little bit more rudder and try to refine that. But all in all, when you're in air-to-air combat, ACM and training, that the real good guys, they could pull the nose around and they can get it right on the very edge of a burble. And if you wanted to reverse course, you didn't do it with rudder. You just did it with, if you got to be careful, just a little opposite aileron and whap, you'd be around to the right side. And the adversary, he couldn't do that unless he was doing it just right. But what a fantastic airplane. Another thing is it had a hard light, the afterburner. And it had this squirrel cage. And this is an afterburner that was stolen from an F-102, and they were very reliable. But the old squirrel cages, when that thing would light, if you had a lot of kind of slow, a lot of angle of attack on the airplane, and you push it up the mill and put it out the burner, you'd always kind of hunker down like that because you could feel the engine. It would go, bam, and fire would shoot out the front, and dirt would fly up in your face, and you say, ooh, wow, that was really cool. So after a while, you got the thing that you could unload it to a lower angle of attack, and you put it out burn, but you put it all the way in min burner. And then you could feel the eyelids finally come open. Now they're open. Now you can gun it, and now you're in full afterburner. So it was really a strange, neat airplane.
So get back to mission. Yes.
Let me add just one little thing to reinforce what General. Dick said. And that compressor stall required an underwear change. But in the quirkiness that he mentioned in to fly this airplane, I'm going to tell you a secondhand story, but it's one that really, I think, gets to the heart of it. Chuck Yeager was a squadron commander of the 1st Fighter Day Squadron, George, and he always flew the F model. I wasn't around, but some of my buddies were there. He always flew the F model, and everyone wanted to fly in the back seat with Yeager, because Yeager was, you know, this giant of a fighter pilot and so forth. So my friend Buzz Byron was in the back seat with him one day, and they go out and they shoot on the rag, and he shoots better on the rag than anybody in the squadron ever thought about shooting. And they come back in and go into the traffic pattern, and he breaks, you know, and he said, you know, the needle, the vertical speed needle never moved a tiny bit. Down on downwind, bang the gear down, turn base leg, perfect pattern, drops the needle to stay right there, comes around on final, most perfect traffic pattern you'd ever seen. And they get down and they get just about to touch down and they go boom, boom. So Yeager pulls the chute and holds the nose off for a while, and it drops the nose, turns off, and he says, you know, I've flown 112 different airplanes, and this is the only son of a bitch I could never land.
So, Dick, back to Vietnam, your missions. What were you flying?
Well, I flew the F-100. I got an assignment to Phu Cat, which is about halfway up between the South Vietnamese area. Phu Cat, what a neat name. Of course, we had a special adaptation to that name. But anyway, that was home to me. And you may have heard of Bud Day. I'm sure you've heard of Bud Day. Anyway, as a major, he was given the task to see if we could survive as forward air controller over North Vietnam. And it was very intense anti-aircraft fire with MiGs and SAMs and everybody shooting at you from small arms to SAM missiles. But we had a problem about finding targets up there and hitting them accurately. So they decided we're going to run a forward air control mission to see if it would work. And Bud Day was given that task, and he rounded up a couple handful of volunteers. And up until then, I was a single-seat, single-engine fighter pilot. And nobody wanted to, fly a two-place airplane. Holy bananas, why would they want to do that? Anyway, I flew in-country, single-seat a little bit, but I got really bored because I'm Blue 14 on the edge of the formation. We come in at high altitude. There's a FAC down there. There's all kinds of exciting things going on down there. And he marks it. We roll in, drop our bombs, and leave. And I says, wow, there's some exciting stuff going on down there. You know, I'd like to be part of it and know more about it. Anyway, Bud Day and I, we went through the gunnery school at the same time. And he lived right next door from us there at Luke. And him and Dory They had a couple of kids, little kids, and they had. He left me with a whole bunch of these cars. I mean, broken down cars. I said, how could a guy go to war and leave his wife with these horrible automobiles? And so I spent a lot of my spare time fixing Bud Day's junk cars that he left there. And so then when I got assigned to FUCAT, I went, hey, Bud Day is here. And so I went running up. When I first got there, I went running up to the little Misty outfit that was out in the back, little back corner in wing headquarters. And I come running in. I says, where the hell is Bud Day? I got a bone to pick with him. And very solemnly, they looked at me and he says, Bud Day was just killed yesterday. And that was the acronym for being shot down. And I thought, my God, this is war. People really do get hurt.
Misties, where'd that name come from? What's it mean?
Misty was the call sign, and it came from Bud Day, and I think he liked the song a lot. But then when I found out what they were doing up there, and they were, our missions were about 6 hours long. We had our own dedicated tanker off the coast of North Vietnam, and we'd come up there, and we would penetrate North Vietnam at low altitude right at dawn. And about an hour
into... How low altitude?
Oh, 3,000 or 4,000 feet, sometimes lower. And it was really funny. You get up and you have a one-hour intelligence briefing for the front seater, back seater. Now, the thing about the Misties, we didn't have a pilot-co-pilot relationship. Every other mission, we would swap front and back. The guy was in the back. He was the secretary, and he was really busy. He took all the film. He recorded all the sightings, all the visual reconnaissance things. He checked all the fighters in. He found out their ordnance. He briefed them on the target. And then the front seater actually marked the target and put them in, and then we... give them their bomb damage assessment and send them on their way. And a lot of times, the bomb damage assessment was none of your ordnance was within 10,000 meters of our target, no visible damage. Have a nice day.
How'd you mark the targets?
Well, the F-100 was set up. We had 7 Willie Pete rockets on each outboard pylon. And it was we could fire them singly, and there were white phosphors. We'd call them Willie Petes. And you'd fire this thing down, and it would glow with smoke. For a while, and then you could mark them. But I wanted to go to Misty so bad. I didn't want to be in country anymore. He says, well, you're a new pilot, and you can only be flight leads can go there. I says, okay, what do I got to do to be a flight lead? He says, well, Rutan, you're a long ways from that status. It may take you 6 months to work to be a combat flight lead. But I kept bugging him and bugging him and bugging him, and finally the commander says, all right, Rutan, we're going to give you a flight lead checkout. And so I went out, and I was no more qualified to be a flight lead, but I got the flight of four out, and we actually hit a target, and we came back, and he says, now get the hell out of here. I'm tired of you bitching about it. And I stayed in Misty the whole time. Misty had a very high loss rate. They only wanted people to stay there for 120 days. That's 3 months. And they figured that that loss rate was going to be reasonable, that nobody could, well, whatever, with a 28% loss rate, that's all they asked for. And it was supposed to be volunteers. I did my first 120 days, and I thought, wow, this is really exciting. So I talked them into a second tour, and I got shot on my start of my third tour.